All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Intersection of Clinical and Administrative Data, or ICAD Task Force meeting. So let's get the meeting called to order now, and I'll begin first by taking roll so we could officially start, and then I'll hand it over to your co-chairs. Cheryl Turney?
Sorry, Cheryl's here.
Thank you. Alex Goss?
Present.
Erin Mary? All right, Alexis Snyder? I'm here. Great. Andy Trescott? Emil Jane?
I'm here.
Thank you. Arian Malik? Deborah Strickland? Denise Webb?
Present.
Thank you. Gus Gerasi?
Here.
Thank you. Jackie Munson? Jim Jarrus.
Here.
Thank you. Jocelyn Keegan.
She's chatted that she's on waiting to be bridged into the call, but she's here per the chat box.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You're welcome, Cassandra.
Mary Green or Alex Muggy. Okay. Ram Sharam.
I'm here.
Thank you. Rich Landon.
I'm here.
Thank you. Sasha Termont.
Hello.
Hello. Steve Brown.
Here.
Hi. Tom Mason. And Carolyn Peterson. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Hey,
Cheryl.
By the way, Arian's here.
Oh, hey, Arian. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheryl.
Thank you, everybody. All right. We can go to the next slide. So on today's agenda, we are going to talk a little bit about the guiding principles and ideal state synthesization that's been going on. And this is the heavy lifting that Anil and Alexis have been working on very diligently offline that they're bringing back to the group. Of course, we have a summary of what we had last meeting, and then we're going to talk about our next few weeks out in terms of how we're going to finish and go to public comment and next steps. So we can move on to the next slide. Okay, so what we did in the last meeting is we provided a reset for everyone, and this was a way to do a couple of things, make sure that we are overarching requirements and themes. So we reviewed the CARES Act relative to the priorities that they've charged high tech to focus on and accommodate. And we wanted to make sure that as we're looking at broadening our scope from prior authorization to the greater scope of intersection of clinical and administrative data, that we're considering these priority areas, which basically include patient focus, privacy and security, and interoperability. And last week we talked a little bit more about interoperability, and then we also had some good discussion from the folks that are going to be presenting to us today. We looked at and discussed some of the work that's going on in by all of the report writers, and then we just had a brief discussion in terms of process, in terms of the best way to move forward to make sure that we are leveraging everybody's efforts in the best way possible. And we talked about ensuring that we keep that focused as we're moving forward. And I think with that, we're going to get right into the conversation today that we have on the agenda, which would be the next topic, which is the guiding principles and ideal state synthesizing discussion. I know, Alex, I'll turn it over to you. I think you're going to run the materials to share, and then Anil and Alexis will do the presenting.
Thank you, Cheryl. Yes, I will be a support mechanism to Anil and Alexis walking through the document today, and then I will also help support facilitate the Q&A after they've had a chance to walk through the document. But I hopefully everyone can see the Achieving the Ideal State Guiding Principle document, that synthesis by Alexis and Anil, and we're at your disposal. Take it away.
Thanks, Alex. It's Alexis. I'm going to start us off, and Anil and I are going to tag team back and forth to review and get everybody's feedback on the various pieces. So basically, as everyone knows, we were tasked with synthesizing, Anil and I, the guiding principles and ideal state piece for the draft. We tackled this by first organizing and sequencing the 9 guiding principles that we have all come to know and love. And we figured we'd start to order them in a way that kind of made best sense, moving from 1 to 9, starting with patient at the center, and so forth, moving on. And if you scroll down just a bit, Alex, you'll be able to see the 9 in the categories where we, there we go. So starting from left to right, top to bottom, each column. So we kind of put them in an order that seemed to make most sense. And then we started, as Alex had suggested, on one of our last calls, with a brief vision statement that would lead us into the guiding principles. And in a couple of minutes, Anil's going to go over that because he wrote most of the vision statement. And then from there, we added Alex had suggested that perhaps we add a definition, a couple of sentences about what each guiding principle was. And so we've done that in each section captured in the blue. And all that said, as we run through it, you'll see that we have black text, which is pulled right from the worksheet and nothing has been changed. The blue is the additional pieces that I just spoke about and some additions and rewords throughout the document that we would love your feedback on. And then the red pieces throughout the document are either strikeout pieces that we kind of went through and took from the workbook and incorporated them into the various bullet points under each ideal, for each ideal state and guiding principle. Or they are places that we pulled from the workbook, but we needed to revisit as a group and look at some of the language there. So lastly, we added at the very end of the document, we'll get to as we go through it all today, a lead-in statement, a brief lead-in statement for the recommendations piece that Arian and Rich will be working on, and we thought that perhaps and that they would add a more personalized on their side piece to this as well. So all that said, if we go back to the top, I will hand it over to Anil to talk about the vision statement that we created.
Great. Thank you, Alexis. So there's two things that are going to come out right away. One is that I'm pretty verbose when I write. And so my thinking there was that it's much easier for us to remove and strike out things than to add them. And the whole idea was that with these 9 guiding principles that we sequenced, you know, what was the vision around what we were trying to achieve? And some of this may be folded into other parts of the document and into the preamble and into the background material. But I thought I would just leave this here for now and get you guys, your guys' reaction to it. And as Alexis mentioned, the blue writing is essentially things that we've added that you folks may not have seen before. But my hope is that with both what Alexis and I wrote, that the blue lends itself pretty well from the comments that were made in our bigger meetings. So if you scroll down from the vision, you'll see the table of the 9 guiding principles. And just a couple things I want to point out. We do have some recommendations on rewording some of the guiding principles and where there's a question for the group, as Alexis mentioned, it's going to be called out. It'll be pretty obvious that we're asking the group for that. And in the time that we have today, we will go through some of those. The other thing I want to mention briefly before we go on to the first guiding principle with Alexis is that I'm not convinced, based on having synthesized some of these, that we need all 9 guiding principles, and there's some content that could be folded into a simplified set of guiding principles, and that's also called out in the text where we're making recommendations. The guiding principles, the 9 of them, were split into 2 groups. One group Alexis managed, and the other group I managed. And in parentheses after each section of the guiding principle, you'll see the initials. And the only reason being, even though we reviewed both of them collectively, if you have specific comments, that's probably the person who's going to review it, even though, again, we've been working together. So I think if there are any if there aren't any questions about the way we approached it, we can have Alexis go right into the first guiding principle. But let's
pause
here.
This is Alex, and I'm not seeing any hands up at this point. The one thing I have a question about is just maybe if we talk a little bit about a process perspective for those of us who have not maybe been in some of the synthesizing team discussions, might be helpful to just add that the goal is to present some content today, get feedback so that the two of you can finish up the synthesizing of this portion, and then we can use that as a major launch off point into our draft document work zone. And that'll also help with the recommendations work that's being done by Arian and Rich. And the goal will be that next week we'll come back with something that's a pretty solid draft to talk to folks about of the synthesized work to date.
I think that's a perfect explanation, and definitely specifically to the work for Arian and Rich, because as we go through it, you'll see that we have a couple of spots where we thought we didn't really have an ideal statement that should be included here and might go into their recommendation list instead. So with all of that said, if we scroll down a little bit, Alex, to the patient at the center, I guess we'll read off our how we defined each of these guiding principles and ask for some feedback and changes that need to be made or not. And so we defining the patient at the center as this guiding principle places the patient at the center of care and focuses on process solutions that remove roadblocks and supports the coordination of timely care while reducing burdens and improving the patient experience and ultimately outcomes. And I guess I would stop after we read each piece and see if anybody has anything they'd like to change or add to this definition. And I think we plan to share this as well, Alex, after the meeting, so people can mark up with comments and get it back to us. Additionally, because there's a lot as we go through it.
Absolutely. This is a first pass to help you get some input so that you can get it to a more solid state. And this is just the beginning of many reviews, I think. And I'm not seeing any hands up, Alexis.
Okay, great. So moving on from there, if we, number one, we pulled right from the workbook. So I'm going to skim over that. Number two, right from the workbook, except highlighted in red, we had this example. So the upfront cost transparency and to the extent possible, the variations in costs specific to site of care or provider. Identifying an accurate cost for the patient will require sharing of additional data that is currently lacking in price transparency tools. And so then on the in the workbook or the worksheets, we had this very specific kind of example, and we're wondering, do we want to leave it just as it is or try to incorporate that example in a more text-worthy, so to speak, kind of way? And I guess I can run through them and people can give us feedback at the end of each one. Number three has remained the same, except for adding that self-pay restriction pieces to it that's striked out, has now been included at the end of number three. Number four, multiple insurance plans are accounted for and coordination of benefits are recognized and consolidated as they apply to coverage. And we had down from the workbook a very basic ideal state bullet that just said accounting for the coordination of benefits. So I tried to expand this a bit to incorporate what we have talked about continually about coordinating benefits, and happy to hear more from folks about whether this captures that or we need to add to it or change it in any way. Number five, we just added lessen burden into the tools exist for all patients that lessen burden and provide a solution to overcome the digital divide, access socioeconomic and literacy barriers. And my question to the larger group is if we should be putting an example at the end of this, or just leaving it as is, or do we want to put an example? And then right underneath that are some crossouts of pieces that were actually already added to number one. So they were moved up to top about somebody quarterbacking and following through from the beginning to the end. So number one incorporated that piece. Just scroll down a little bit, Alex. I think that's it for this section. The rest of the strikeouts were notes in the workbook, and I have consolidated them all into the five pieces above. So that's just a quick overview of the patient at the center piece. Any questions?
I'm not seeing any questions raised, but I am seeing a comment from Jim indicating that he agrees with the idea of more examples are better. I perceive that as being related to number five.
Any particular example brainstorming that anybody would like to provide?
I see Rich Landon's hand up. I'm not sure if his line is still muted or if he's available to chat. Rich? We were getting some background noise, so I think they may have muted your line. I'm not sure if you're still muted.
Rich, your line is live.
Okay, thank you. Also on five, I agree we need some examples. I'm particularly concerned that we talk about tools, and I think we should use the word should in there, should be made, should be created. But I think we need examples because I can't think of a tool, particularly a digital tool that would reduce burden and yet be able to address the digital divide and some of the other concepts there. So I think that would benefit from examples, but no, unfortunately, I don't have one on the top of my head. Thanks.
Okay, and my only concern about, you know, trying to come up with some specifics of what to put here, and people can comment later on as well in the document when it goes out, is making sure that we're not actually making a recommendation statement instead, since that's going into the next piece that you guys are working on. And then I would quickly say that Anil and I tried very consciously in the ideal state to stay away from words like should or will, because we were not making a recommendation, but making more of an ideal state bullet point, saying that this is what, if this ideal state existed, this is what it would be. So that's why we have tools exist, but obviously we can revisit and change that as a group as well, just so you're familiar with where the wording is coming from.
Okay, thanks. Does make sense, and that I withdraw my concern about the should.
Okay.
Your next in the queue is Denise, then Jocelyn.
Hi, this is Denise. Building on to some of the things that Rich said, when I think of, I struggled with the tools exist from the perspective that right now I'm working with a Medicaid beneficiary who has cognitive deficits. And when I think about what she needs to get to understand what's going on and for us to overcome the digital divide and access divide and all these other things, it's really having resources, which might include tools, readily available for all patients that lessen the burden and really help them navigate the healthcare system.
I like that.
So I'm suggesting resources readily available.
And I wonder if you can say accessible.
And accessible.
Accessible, yep. And readily available would be great. And then perhaps the tools is the recommendation list for Rich and Arian to consider.
Yeah, I don't think for all of us who are in healthcare and have the advantage of being in healthcare, you know, even for us it's complex. In this particular situation I mentioned, This young lady was actually, she was on Medicaid and had coverage on her father's plan and didn't even know or understand that. So she didn't even know to tell them she had health coverage other than Medicaid. Very complicated. I had trouble working through all of it, and I thought, oh my God, how do these people do this? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Good additions. You also have, in addition to Jocelyn, Cheryl is in the queue.
So when we're talking about the concept of tools, are we looking for examples like what we're looking at is the concept of having open APIs that are accessible, right? Or are we looking at, the ability to have different types of services available to the different stakeholder groups? I guess I'm having trouble visualizing in my head what we're proposing, because I think that if we go down the path, which I think makes sense around resources, the ability of leveling the field by making everything available via open APIs in, standard-based ways is something that I think would give people the resources for innovation to happen and for anyone to be able to get access without specialized knowledge, which is the current, world that we live in, that you need to have very specific relationships and very specific knowledge to be able to unleash this data to be able to use it.
Good point. And I would say, this is Alexis again, I would say that we literally pulled this from when we all worked through and came up with what the ideal states were. It literally said tools exist. And so that's why I was asking if we should incorporate some examples. And when I say examples, I don't mean examples of specific tools, because I think that's more recommendation. I mean more like number two, where we say, for example, mail order versus brick and mortar pharmacy. It was kind of the same thing. Do we need to have people understand with an example like that about, some sort of an example of where the problem is with the digital divide or access?
Right. So in that case, I think I would say something like, for example, open standard-based APIs versus proprietary closed systems, right?
Yep, and I'm so glad that we have
Alex. If I'm interpreting what you're saying, that, I think, kind of puts it out in the right place. But I could be off the farm on this one. I just want to make sure I'm following what you guys are thinking about for this line item.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah.
And this is Cheryl. I was on the same line of thinking as what the point that Jocelyn brought up. So I think for tools, I was thinking that we were not only talking about things like open standards-based API, but also innovative applications that would allow the patient and, to see information that they can't see today. So if you had an application where you can, look and estimate your cost, you would want to be able to also know that there's two different procedures that could be had, and if there's a prior authorization that's required for one and maybe not for the other. And you can make a choice and, be able to understand what the process is as it goes through whatever the approval mechanism is. And I thought that's what we were talking about when we were talking about tools is really, and I know it gets into transparency, but I think we need to be a little more descriptive in terms of what the tool is that we're looking for.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, you touched on it. I think a lot of what you just said, you'll see in the next section in transparency. So we'll have to decide how we better define the tools piece here.
Yeah. But I think maybe even just to say it's not just, the APIs or the service, but it's also some application that you're able to utilize to, support what you're looking for. To support.
Yeah, I think that that's what I had got out of our prior meetings with the tools too, that it was more it's both, but that it also includes what you're saying, things like third-party apps and things to be able to access things. But then how do we overcome that in a way that it's accessible to everybody? So it's a challenge here in writing this one now.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It is a challenge. All right, thank you. That's my
okay.
Looks like Anil.
Anybody else?
Just Anil?
Yeah, this is Anil. So I was just going to say that I think when you start to see some of the other sections, you'll start to see that some of the questions that are being raised could be already addressed in other sections. That's number one. Number two, this, as we've been discussing, is synthesized from the workbook that we all worked on earlier. And so one of the things that we could run into is we could end up revising that while we're reviewing the synthesis of the material. So I think we do need to do that for sure and revisit some of these themes. But if you look at this particular bullet, I think the point was that from a patient-centric perspective, whatever solutions we come up with should not be contributing to the digital divide or the access issues or dealing with some of the barriers that exist today. It shouldn't make things worse than they are today. The solutions to those, you all may see some sprinkling of those in other sections, but also I think what Ariane and Rich are going to have to do is make recommendations on how we would come up with solutions that don't make things worse when it comes to a digital divide or literacy, for example. Does that make sense?
Yeah, easy peasy.
Yeah, easy peasy. Yeah, and also recognize that they're going to do a similar effort of taking the work we've already done to produce recommendations. And so this is going to be, you know, I think the next week we're going to see some clean text that is going to help all of us as a community really, you know, the task force members are going to be able to start to see how all the pieces connect from the data classes and categories to guiding principles to ideal state to recommendations for the prior authorization piece. And that's sort of just a part of the larger story. But I think having that is going to help us really have a better a view of what's missing and how do we need to maybe tighten up some of the gaps. So easy peasy, yeah. Maybe our new phrase. Thank you, Ariane.
Yeah, so I suggest we move to the next guiding principle so we don't run out of time because there's a lot more in some of the other ones. So transparency, defined as increased patient and provider access to real-time information on the status of prior authorization requests to minimize delays, provide clarity, and ensure the patient is able to manage care and follow through with treatment or service. And then the following ideal state bullets. Again, remember that the black text is pulled directly from what we all came up with in the workbook for ideal state, and then we've just tweaked some wording or consolidated pieces. So in number one, same definition, same ideal state from the workbook, except we've added at the end of the status of the PA transaction, each step in the process, there will be a common source of truth to the prior authorization status. And that came out of the crossed out bullet number four and got added up there. Some of them seemed a bit redundant and it seemed to make more sense to put it in this one. Number two is the same and number three is the same. So hopefully this is a quick section that we might be able to breeze through at this point. Questions or comments?
No hands are raised.
Cool. So let's move on to Anil's section.
All right, awesome. Okay. So the third guiding principle, and I'm not going to rehash the what the different colors mean. The only difference here is you see some highlights. Those are specific questions for the team. That we would love to go over. Let me read out the definition of this design for the future while solving needs today. The PA process will support today's comprehensive requirements while being extensible and resilient to support the evolving nature of the PA process by encouraging adoption and ongoing innovation. And I, again, the sentence is meant to define the guiding principle. I'm personally not that fond of design for the future while solving needs today as the phrase for the guiding principle. That's what we currently have. But if there's a different, shorter phrase that we'll take recommendations for what that that guiding principle might be rephrased. And that, I think, goes for any of the guiding principles. We should all look at them as a whole and then say, are these the right words to be used? Okay. The first bullet appeared to be redundant with other sections, so it's I have strikeout there. You can review it and make sure that it is indeed the case that that we've captured that in subsequent sections. Number two and number three pretty much comes from the text. I did make minor adjustments from the workbook and kept it in black if it was simply to clarify grammar or, you know, things like that. Otherwise, it's the same intent as previously. There is a sentence in here around the innovation that might occur. I know we've discussed this as a team a number of times, but I did write that the innovation must be done in a non-discriminatory manner to include broad participation among stakeholders. And again, what I'm trying to get at here is some things that we've discussed as a team, just how do we make sure that people are allowed to innovate, but that we don't leave anyone behind, at least not intentionally. And so you can let us know whether we need, you know, further verbiage, or you can let us know now in terms of making sure that it's clear. And I try to use the language that we've used in other parts of the interoperability regs. Not being an expert, you guys tell me if I've captured that correctly.
You have one. Do you want to continue, or this is your number
question.
Four? Okay,
yeah,
you have one from Jocelyn.
Okay.
So we actually brought this topic up while we were working offline, Jim and Josh and I, around the idea, almost the opposite, which is right now the burden for people to innovate is actually very heavy to actually go through an exception process. And so I feel like I like what you're saying here. I think we need to hit both sides of it. We can't leave people behind, but we also need to make sure that the innovators actually have the opportunity to innovate and that we don't create undue burden for people who want to prove out new technology.
Yeah, I completely agree. So if there's a good way for us to say exactly what you just described, it would be good. What I'm trying to avoid is the following.
Not that way, but yeah. I think we wrote something. I'll have to look at what we put in our section. And we have some things, I think, that probably don't live in our home long term, but we just wanted to capture them while we were writing. So we might be able to lift that language.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay.
No other hands.
And, I'm sorry?
There are no other hands raised.
Okay. And then number four comes from our text. Again, it might have one or two words that are slightly different, but it's the same functionally, the same meaning as what was in our workbook. If you continue to scroll. Okay. Any other questions about that third guiding principle before we get to the next one?
There are no hands raised.
Okay. So the fourth guiding principle is written as measurable and significant improvement. Again, just my own perspective is that we should have it rephrased, maybe measurable and meaningful. And meaningful because it's not just about improvement that's significant, but as you'll see in some of the things I've written, that the process will be. Oops, that should be blue. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to do that, but for some reason it decided to shrink my document.
Because of the review changes, the track changes is on, so it just added something to the side. Anyway.
Right, but I tried to get rid of that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the process will be measurable so we can track progress, and it should be meaningful for all stakeholders. That is, it should have a significant impact across the entire process, rather than having marginally incremental impact or significant impact for just a single stakeholder. We don't want it to be, you know, marginal or where only one group gets a significant benefit. It should be across the board. And so that's why I was suggesting meaningful. Get some feedback from you guys in terms of the right verbiage for that guiding principle. You'll recognize most of the text below. I think I've just put them in bullets and reorganized them a little bit, and in some cases reordered the bullets of the ideal state. I'm not going to go through and read everything. I did add one in blue, one thing about that it might take time to get to the 95%. And so in blue, it's written that maybe the 95% goal can be phased in with annual targets, for example. Again, that I added that wasn't specifically in the workbook, but we can react to it as a group. Number three, the only thing I added there is that we have to recognize that some PA transactions may not be feasible by a fully electronically automated PA process. The rest of the black writing is right from our workbook, but I wanted to describe why the black writing is even there.
Mm-hmm.
So in the ideal state, we have to accept the fact that there will be some PA transactions that will be the edge cases. Any questions, concerns?
Rich typed something in the chat box, but Jocelyn raised her hand. So go ahead, Jocelyn.
So I think that the target idea is a great one, and I really support us moving there. I think that there's so much variation, and we've seen this on the pharmacy side, of sort of checking the box to automate the things that are very easily automated and then being able to examine, should we even be putting these things under PA? This is something that I get to spend a lot of time on. You know, why are you PAing it if you're approving 99.5% of them all the time anyways?
Right.
That's waste for everybody.
Right.
Things that can be approved just based on an ICD-10 code or, you know, the right disease state sort of being checked in somebody's medical history. I guess what I'm really struggling with is I feel like there's a maturity curve that has more to do with just PA automation, but really a specific area. So just this morning, the Da Vinci team and the Codex team were meeting to talk about how to work on automating prior authorization for oncology, which has layers of complexity that have nothing to do with prior authorization beyond what approving a single med PA for something that's on retail, right? So I almost feel like, and I'm doing a little bit of a soliloquy here, so I apologize, but I think acknowledging sort of the complexity of the different types of prior authorization might be more important than just sort of phasing in overall percentages, because there are places where we could get to 95% easy, right, using the button that Arian's going to make.
Right.
For.
Yep.
But I think that acknowledging that we're going to have to mature the industry on that whole workflow, not just the actual prior authorization.
Right. So
or sort of setting targets by focus area or something like that seems more realistic to me.
Yeah, I agree. Again, there was multiple areas where I wanted to add stuff and even change stuff. But what I tried to do very hard was just to synthesize what existed. And then the was to explain what was already in black. So what was already in black was perhaps having goals over time. And so that's the blue. But I completely agree with you. I think it should be based on the type of PA. It should be based on the stakeholder. And then just to quickly reflect on Rich's comment that is in the chat box, I think it's not about prohibiting one group from innovating rapidly. But I do think that as a industry or as the entire PA process, what I'm worried about is where the patient is left behind because the other stakeholders are rapidly innovating and not thinking about the patient, or where the provider is left behind. But it doesn't mean that the health plan can't move at lightning speed or warp speed, as long as they're thinking about the other stakeholders in terms of what their experience is going to be like. That's all I meant. And I think that's what we meant when we actually put that in there in some ways. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay, Richard, yes, okay. He's agreed. And we have Jim Georges, too, who raised his hand.
Yeah, I just want to agree with what you're saying, because I think the situation now when we've done pilots has been that there's a lopsidedness where one group may move ahead, but the needs of the provider or patients have been left behind. And so
right.
I just wanted to, I mean, in the real world, that's happening today. And if we're not careful with following what you're saying, we'll end up with very lopsided technologies that support one stakeholder and don't really help the whole industry and raise all boats.
No. So when you guys look at this later on, if there's a different way for us to say that in a very clarifying way, you know, that's the goal of, once Alexis and I are done resynthesizing this, we'll turn it back over to you all, and you know, you can write that or make the suggestions in there, and we can review them again as a team. Any other?
Alexis has raised her hand.
Okay.
Yeah, I was basically just going to say what Anil just ended up saying, that I just as I listened to everybody and I listened to Anil explain it, you know, we want to make sure that we reword things that capture what he's explaining so that the reader in the end who isn't part of this group understands it without someone, you know, having to explain it to them. So definitely need feedback on ways to add those pieces.
All right. I'll give you a chance to finish editing.
Okay. There we go. I just wanted to capture it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I assume that the transcript will be made available to Alexis and I as well, in terms of the comments. Is that the case?
I think it could be. I see no reason why it couldn't be.
We'll just
ask the powers that be.
Just as we synthesize the final version for the team to review, it would be good just to double check and make sure we didn't miss any comments. Okay. All right. So the next one is continuous improvement. Again, that's what the guiding principle is written as for now. We defined it as the PA process should embrace the concepts of evidence-based, data-driven, continuous improvement akin to learning healthcare systems among stakeholders with metrics and goals. Just the definition I think a lot of us would accept as continuous improvement. And many of the bullets that are here are just synthesized from the workbook. I think if you scroll down, and they might be reordered and reorganized, there is one, the very fourth bullet, that talks about how the metrics would be used. And I think the question for the team is, some of these could actually be recommendations. Meaning when Arian and Rich have a review of this, they could simply think of this as a way to guide their synthesis. So you'll see that in here in a few places. But otherwise, I think most of this is almost, verbatim from the workbook. In some cases, reworded.
Are you looking for feedback specifically on number four now?
No, just the general concept of differentiating some of the ideal state bullets that are really about, you know, what the ideal state should look like versus what needs to happen for us to get there. And so I would just recommend for the entire team, when they're reviewing this, to keep an eye out for things that may be beyond the ideal state, but really things that should happen as recommendations. And I've called them out in the places where I've noticed them. I'm sure I know that Alexis has done the same, but I'm sure there are other places as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to agree.
Okay. I see no hands up or comments.
Okay, awesome. All right, I think the next one is back to Alexis.
Yeah. Okay, so real-time data capture and workflow automation, we defined as support clinical care to reduce the time and effort used to document information for prior authorization with automated processes that are updated in real time rather than processes that operate in the background to improve usability and efficiency of all stakeholders. And then everything again is moved from the workbook. Scrolling down to number two, regardless of the venue of care, the prior authorization process mechanically should be similar for both the clinician and the patient, regardless of health plan, since patients move across the health ecosystem and providers should not be burdened with disparate workflows depending upon the venue. So I had this highlighted in red just because I was having a hard time with the wordiness of it and wondering if the way that we had this written in the workbook actually makes sense to the reader. So feedback on that either now at the end of this section or offline when you all review the document would be great. The other pieces, number five, just added for clarification and fixing up some of the wording. There we go. All insurance coverage will be identified and verified. We added on or before the point of service, related supports provided for ongoing coordination of benefits. I then added that allows for efficient and comprehensive coverage as allowed, and that was to capture the information in the strikeout there. And my question to the group was, is that captured or do we need the specifics of putting in the 270/271, et cetera, pieces there? Number six, information required for recommendations and decision-making should be provided one time by the source whenever possible. And when I read that back from the workbook, it didn't make sense to me. So I had it as a highlight for us to reconsider as a group what we were trying to say with that ideal state, or if it's clear and we leave it. Number seven sounded like it perhaps could go up into our definition of what this guiding principle is in that blue statement versus doing it as a bullet here. So open to what folks think about that, automating prior authorization through health IT and focus on what information can be exchanged to make any coverage decision better, faster, and more transparent. We can either leave it here or incorporate it above. And then number eight, just expanded upon and took notes in red, took notes from the workbook to expand upon what was just once, just said collect once and reuse. So we expanded that here with data will be collected once and reused for additional permissible purposes when feasible and clinically meaningful to reduce undue burden on stakeholders. And then again, wondering as in some of the guiding principles earlier where I mentioned, are we missing examples in this area, perhaps about red flagging an area that would stand out as to not be collected once and be updated, such as weight, height, et cetera, if we're talking about something like pharmaceuticals. And I think if you scroll down a bit, that might be the, there's one more, okay. Two more. Okay, so there was a note under number 12 in the workbook to revisit this wording, and I wasn't sure what that meant. So as a group, I think we need to just revisit this paragraph of ideal state. I won't read it out loud right now. And then a couple more, the last two. Number 13 looks as if it might be better, again, up in the statement, rather than leaving it as an ideal state so that we could perhaps condense this long list since there's 14. So that's just another thought for the group. And then lastly, this last one, number 14, was sitting in the workbook in this area for ideal state under this principle. But it seems like it might be redundant here because there's pieces of it almost worded identically in privacy and security. So just as folks are reviewing perhaps offline, seeing if we can just strike this one out because it's captured in privacy and security, or if you feel that there's a way that we need to reword it and keep it here. So I know that was a lot, but I'm trying to run through since I'm conscious of how late it's getting. So questions or comments here.
You have Arian in the queue. Arian?
Hey, I think the comment or the recommendation or I guess the target state on provide the information once was related to
this one.
One time by the source was this is a vague and dim memory. So if this is or it's not relevant, feel free to disregard this. But the notion that sometimes in a prior authorization process, you can you get rejected for one thing, you fix it, and then you get rejected for another thing, where it would be more efficient to say, hey, here are all the things that you need to address in order for this prior auth to be approved. But again, that may just be me retrofitting.
No, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, and
has hands up. I'm sorry, I was going to capture
the
note.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Rich?
Yeah, also on number six, since we're talking about the ideal state, I'd delete the term whenever possible. So we are talking about the ideal. That just, whenever possible, leaves a loophole that has been exploited under the current system many times, so better to take it out. Also, we went through this kind of fast, but I'm getting sense that there's a number of these that have concepts that are either the same or closely related. So after we get done with this, we may want to take a look through it again and look for some of that redundancy and call it out a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And as Arian and I read through our sections again, we'll make sure that some of them don't look like they could be synthesized together or are two different thoughts saying the same thing, because there do seem to be a lot of bullets in this section from the workbook.
This was the biggest section we had, and it was started to feel to me in the development process like the kitchen sink. And that sometimes is necessary because it gives you the full picture in the pot, but at the same time, it can be too much to absorb. So I think this is so much cleaner work. It's really going to be a lot easier to do a review, a thoughtful review. Thank you, Anil and Alex.
I agree.
We're good. We hope so.
My comment is to disparaging the work. It's the first lift is the heaviest, and then we can do the refining later, but it's a really tough job to get it this far, and you've really moved it forward. So thank you.
Great.
Well said.
Okay, so
I see no further hands in the queue.
Okay. All right. The next one is aligned to national standards. So the prior authorization process will leverage and align to existing national standards and contribute to the community development of additional national standards where gaps are identified rather than reinvent new methods. And it could be wordsmith to be a little bit more meaningful, but the idea being here that we're not going to try to create yet another set of standards for something that we are all trying to march towards, a harmonized state where administrative and clinical worlds intersect. Essentially did some lifting and shifting over into from the workbook into this, synthesized, reordered, and put some bullets for a few that some that might have some questions. So there was a discussion around the attachment standards, and I know there are folks on the call who are much more of an experts than I am on this. So review the language to see whether I've synthesized it correctly and whether I've rephrased what was in bullets in the workbook into sentences that we could react to. And we can do that quickly now, or we could wait until we all review.
I propose, since it's 4 o'clock and we effectively have a maximum of 20 minutes left, because Cheryl and I, after we talked last night, guys, we thought, you know, this is such an important effort. We're going to be really flexible with the agenda today. So, except for we do need to do public comments. So the rest of the time is really dedicated to this. So not too much pressure. You've got a little bit more breathing room than you maybe thought.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so again, the main point here is that you got someone like me in some cases who doesn't fully understand what it means synthesizing some bullets. So just review and make sure that I didn't screw something up on the synthesis of it. And then again, if we need examples to clarify, folks who are experts on that could throw the examples in so that we can provide some clarity for the other readers. On the next one, number three, there was a something in the workbook around revisiting specific recommendations, and so something about, you know, adding stuff to the appendix. Just have a look at that and see what we meant by that, because I don't recall.
I think I did this. This is Alex, and I think it was a placeholder many moons ago. And we had not gotten to the recommendation status in some of our iterative development small working group efforts. And there was also this thought about how much does everybody know about HIPAA and do we need to provide any additional context on that? So this second part was more about thinking about who our readers might be and whether they had I'm not sure how they got to black in all of this, but I will
I know that I've had some issues with copy-paste where some colors have been screwed up. So that's probably, the black is probably, I'm not sure, but it could be just my copy-paste.
No, I think.
Thank you.
I will try my best, but I don't want to burn time. So I do think this needs to be commented upon and reviewed, because I think there's a couple themes here. One was about the recommendations. The other one was about the context and the readers and whether they had the admin simp expertise. When it came down to the standards advancement process for administrative and clinical standards, there was as some of you may recall, we had a sort of a robust discussion around the ability to request an exception, and I probably referred it to affectionately as section 162.940, which is the ability for under the initial regulations to how one would go about upgrading a promulgated standard. And we were getting into sort of a little bit of the dynamic with understanding that world of HIPAA with what it might mean to the new standards version advancement process, or SFAP, which was adopted under the most recently promulgated interoperability rules from ONC. And that's what those were about. Does that help, Emil, or just muddy the water?
I think if there is a specific recommendation on how the text should read, I would love to get that. Otherwise, the way I understand this is that we are basically, you're basically identifying that there might be a need for additional material in the appendix, but also we may want to have cross references between certain sections where additional background is needed. And I think that's going to be important.
Yeah, and I think that's really about where this is a placeholder comment for where the report ends up. When we started to build a draft, Cheryl started with the annual report from HITECH. So we have a really robust appendix compendium of, you know, references, et cetera, but it's more like brief descriptions or definitions. It doesn't, so this may be better actually cross-referenced for the final report and aiding clarity, reader clarity or references to underpinning regulations or federal processes. Okay.
Okay. Um, The next one?
I'm not seeing any other hands, Cop, but I did see Jocelyn had a comment about the attachments where you asked if we were talking about the 275 attachments or more broadly the concept of clinical data payload. And that, to me, is a little bit of a loaded question, Jocelyn, because that really speaks to the fact that we don't have an attachment standard today, and that the what we thought might be the recommended attachment standard based upon the, dare I say, numerous recommendations NCVHS has made, times are a-changing, and I think we need to revisit that all the way around. So I think in here, it's been more of the traditional concept of attachment, which is the 275, as opposed to the more elegant ability to exchange information agnostic of certain transports and have a very important payload delivered. Would you like something added to the document reflecting that? Okay. I thank you for telling me I'm perfect, but tell me what you want me to do in the document.
So I think maybe I would probably call out specifically that we're referring to the X12-275 here, because I think that I would word number two much differently if it wasn't called out that we're talking about the narrow constraints of what the 275 can do versus more broadly, to your point, some other solutions that might give us more flexibility to share less data and get more precise about what only needs to be exchanged for this particular workflow. Thanks.
You're welcome. I see no other hands up.
Okay, let's keep going. If you scroll down a little bit, number four is from the workbook. Number five, this should have been blue. I synthesized a bunch of different notes. Number five is my, it's taking into consideration a couple different comments that were made, and I took the liberty of redoing it and including a bunch of different concepts. So have a look at it and see if it captured some of the notes that were being made in the workbook.
This is a juicy one. I remember debating this with Arian. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and
all right.
So if there aren't any other comments, we'll move on to the next one. But you know, have a look, because that was one where I spent a little bit of time trying to digest what was being written in the notes. Okay, data model I struggled with. I don't know if others feel the same, but I don't understand how we could have data model as a concept be a guiding principle. I think the whole point of sort of thinking about how clinical and administrative data intersect and how we're using prior auth as a poster child for why we need to harmonize and make those worlds interoperable is the entire crux of what we're working on. So having data model called out separately as a guiding principle, to me, it just didn't make a lot of sense. And instead, I regurgitated what was in the workbook. You can see below that purple down there, right from the workbook. I'm thinking that perhaps we sort of either rephrase this into the aligning to national standards, or in the preamble and intro of this entire work, we talk about why there needs to be a harmonized data strategy between clinical and administrative. I'm not sure you need a single data model because perhaps you just need crosswalks and ways of making those worlds intersect. But I'm struggling with this one.
I was just really quickly going to say, Anil and I talked a lot about this offline, and I fully agree with what he's saying. And I feel as if, and wondering what the group is thinking, that it's more the pieces within this guiding principle and then the ideal state bullets are kind of all ideal state, and perhaps we move them into one of the other eight principles and end up just with eight guiding principles. And so I'm not sure where, but off the top of my head, I feel like maybe that's the one that we're talking about possibly renaming, which is the designing the future, aligning with today.
Jocelyn has her hand up.
So Josh? As we were going through the data class conversation, I've been having this sort of existential crisis in my head about, well, what we're defining really isn't the data classes. What we're really defining is the different steps of workflow. And I feel like the data model is intrinsically intertwined here because there are a number of different standards that are used across all of the existing workflows, and what we need to do is synthesize them. So I think your point around, you know, this ability to be able to think about this maybe simply as there's a part of data modeling, which is how do we better synthesize across all of these currently invested technologies? How do we acknowledge that where you are in workflow is going to influence which one of these tools you pick up to use, right, to solve the problem, I think is really at the heart of really what we're trying to do here. I think the breaking down the walls between this is CMS and this is ONC is what's critically important here to say all of these things need to talk to each other. And back to Arian's sort of pointed comments in the previous open questions around, you know, really where are we getting stuck because we can't get a crosswalk done because of IP issues or because of sort of business model issues, I think is important. So I could completely, if this content went and lived someplace else, I think it would be okay to not talk about data model. But I think that, and I don't know if we've gotten to it yet, I think this concept of sort of workflow being king here for the work that we're trying to do, I think is really important.
Jim just raised his hand. Tim Georges?
Yeah. Sorry, I was on
mute.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know, the question about whether the word data model is the right word or whether we need in the guiding principles the notion of what the US CDI is all about and kind of what's happened in the clinical space with the third-party APIs, you know, clarifying standardization of the data meaning creates an opportunity for all these different tools and workflows to, you know, have less barriers. And so it seems like not having any guiding principle addressing the meaning of the data, as Jocelyn was saying, it seems like it's missing. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, Jim, I was just going to say that it's in there under aligning to national standards. We do refer to the US CDI there. So I'm not suggesting that the content of why this is important be removed entirely, but I'm just thinking that it probably, it's a broader thing that applies to almost everything we're doing in this. So
right,
having it as a thing, it just,
yeah,
I think it actually diminishes the importance of a harmonized data strategy for how the workflow gets captured and optimized.
I understand.
So maybe we need to move it into the automation and workflow, the real-time section, and then pull out, add it to that ideal as ideal states there. And then maybe Rich and Arian could pull out the pieces that become recommendations.
Just one more comment from Jim. And it's not just defining the standards and aligning, it's compelling their use, right? Because a lot of these don't have a lot of adoption. And we had talked a little bit about, in one of our subgroups, about addressing incentives in some way. And so, you know, there are standards that exist now that people aren't using. And so one of the principles is that we identify and align with standards, but we also have incentive for their use. And I don't know if that's captured enough by just referring to the standards, aligning with standards. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is Anil. I mean, I think that was we in a prior meeting, I think we identified that the incentives and the discussion around the incentives as to what is going to propel folks to actually do this was sort of missing in a sense. I mean, but I wasn't sure whether that would be part of the guiding principles or whether that would be sort of in our introduction and what levers we have from a policy point of view, the different stakeholders and what they've all told us in the briefing, and then using that to identify in the recommendation section that Arian and Rich would do, what are the recommendations that we would make to create those levers that will foster the adoption, the accelerated adoption of existing standards and adoption of anything new, I would think that would be in the recommendations. But I, you know, that's what I recall from prior meetings.
I see Rich's hand up. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Jim, and then Rich, then Arian, and I'm just going to...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to scroll ahead while you're doing that. I'm just trying to do time check because we get like 5 minutes to public comment. So, just, so Jim, round yourself out with any comments, then Rich, then Arian.
I'm yielding my time to the senator on the floor.
All right, we don't have that much more. Okay. Rich? You may be on mute, my friend. You may still be on mute, and while you address that, I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I'm going to go and yield to Arian.
Hey, so yeah, and I think we do have recommendations here, so we may want to go back to the guiding principles after we hammer out the recommendations, but I think this has been really useful just to look at our harmonized statement of guiding principles or future state.
I was going to say speed read through the next section, but I forgot we had to get back to Rich.
I'm still trying to see if, oh, there he is.
You can hear me now? Yeah, I'm not a data modeling
guy. And
you're
breaking
this, up. Sorry, this, a lot of the nuances may be above my head, but I can't conceive of an interoperable world where we're managing floors and ceiling without some sort of referent that people can use to figure out what they need to build, and that referent then will need to be updated over time. So I'm not concerned whether we call it a data model or not, and I'm not concerned where we include this, but I think the concept of some sort of reference is critical somewhere in the final paper.
Thank you. All right, so information security, I think, is the next aspect.
Yeah. So I think that's our last one, although there I will preface this, since we only have 4 minutes before public comment, that this was very lengthy and has a lot of review needed. And so rather than, I guess, you know, trying to fix it now, people comment offline when they review the document. But of course, we could quickly answer any question. So defining this, just since there's a couple different colors, the black was the only piece that we kind of had there. And then we pulled, or I pulled from a couple different places in the workbook and the documents to kind of expand to this. And pulled two different pieces together. So the blue was a second half of a definition from the workbook. And so you can read that later and see what we think about that piece. The strikeouts right below that are where we pulled and added into that definition for guiding principle rather than making it an ideal state except for one piece below. No changes to one. Number two, we wanted to just revisit with the group the pieces that we had broken out into A, B, and C here and make sure that we're clear about what we're defining for ideal state here. Number three, just taking from some of the pieces and striked out later on below, added in blue some of the pieces to this definition when we had some discussion in regards to the transparency as well. And so some of it might overlap a bit, but I tried to write it in a way that it was different for this area to apply to privacy and security because they certainly go hand in hand. So we could revisit if we have any redundancy somewhere, but important to leave it here. You guys could review the strikeouts offline. I believe that they have all been incorporated in the ideal states and in the definition of the guiding principle. And so we just need to renumber that when we fix it up was my note there. And number five, I'm not sure why there's some stuff underlined and in purple now, we can look at that.
I can tell you that.
Offline as well. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that would have just been an editing exercise when I was when we were actually doing recommendations work. That purple was the color I used for that. And there was a very different work, a small group process for privacy and security than was the tack of the other small groups. So that was a little bit of what
gotcha.
You tripped into.
Ah, okay. Because I don't remember seeing the purple before. And the greens with the strikeouts, I believe, were comments on an earlier call that Cheryl was adding for us to revisit and get into the ideal state. So I am hoping that those strikeouts I have included well, incorporated into the ideal state, so folks could revisit that as well. And I don't know if you want me to stop here because it's 4:20.
Well, it looks like you got to the end of it. And so maybe what I think we should do is let us go to, I'll stop sharing, I believe, or Excel. I don't know if you can take control. Thank you. And we'll go to public comment.
Thank you. Operator, can you open the line for public comment, please?
Thank you. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have any comments in the queue?
We currently have no comments.
All right, thank you. Alex?
Thank you, Cassandra. I guess we can wait to let us know if there's any that come in. So what I'm thinking is at this point, guys, terrific job, Anil and Alexis. You've gotten us, I think, 99% through all your edits in the time we had today. And I think the next step with all of this is that you've gotten some feedback today. I think you're going to do another run through, maybe a little bit of a cleanup. And I think that we've got a very strong audit trail from our initial Excel workbook to our Word documents and through the color coding and the way you've edited this. And that took a lot of extra effort on your part. And I think that was tremendously helpful and very transparent for us today. And I think that we'll have to make some choices about how we merge this into a working document. And we're going to be addressing that over the next couple of days. We have several teams that are going to be doing similar synthesizing efforts. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that timeline here in a second. I think I'm going to do a check-in to see if that there are any other comments. And it looks like we did not get any public comments at this point in time. So maybe it's time for us to go back to the slide deck and talk a little bit about the next steps. So Cheryl, I think, am I doing wrap up today?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. So as you may have noticed that we've deviated a little bit from the plan that we forecasted 2 weeks ago, and that's really indicative of the diving into the deep end of the pool by the synthesizing team and helping us to really understand what the lift was going to look like and how the pieces might need to come together. And it's one thing to sort of forecast a process. It's another thing to make it actually work. And I really want to do a shout out to so many, like, you know, Jim and Jocelyn and Deb and Anil and Alexis and Rich and Arian and Gus, who've been working alongside with, you know, Cheryl, myself, and Michael Witte and Andrew to really pull all this together with the support from our designated federal official and acting, AKA Lauren and Cassandra. And so what we are doing right now is today getting a really critical touch point with the full task force to get us feedback on these guiding principles and ideal state. We can then now take this work, make it much more of a solid draft. We've gotten some input to help with the recommendations team, and then what we're going to do is receive a number of the draft synthesis work by the end of Friday, and then we're going to put it into a draft document. And what we're thinking is that likely next week we will present that to you as in kind of a template to get your brain around what a report might look like, and to start to be able to actually do a review and comment on the drafted sections from the synthesizing teams. That will also also provide us opportunities to potentially discuss some gap areas, some stakeholder input, stakeholder chart that's being developed by the data classes group, and that will also then help us with sort of getting our arms squarely around all the work to date, and having that in one draft document, we believe will give us a better launch off point for some of the broader considerations that we need to get into over the next couple of weeks. Writing is a Herculean lift. The first part is always the hardest, as Rich Julie noted. And I think the effort of the last couple of weeks will enable us to refine our timeline process for the next month or so, but we need to get through the next week and change to really have a clearer picture to really help us achieve that September 9th presentation to the HITECH about the work to date and our draft recommendations. Ideally, we wanted to also give them a report at that point, and I think we're going to have to adjust some of our expectations around that right now. So that's kind of a heads up to everybody that we're going to be tweaking this timeline as we move forward over the next week or two. But hopefully everybody's pretty clear that the time to get your red pen, so to speak, out and schedule yourself some quiet time to do detailed reviews, if that is something that hopefully you've done for the next couple of weeks, to give yourself some time and space to look at the summary work that's being done, and then also to not only think about that for the accuracy of what the pen to paper exercise to reflect what we've intended, but it will also give you the opportunity to think about what we're missing, and that may be another way to more effectively go to the broader intersection conversation. Cheryl, I would love it if you would add color commentary to all that.
Thank you, Alex. You know, great job, everybody, today in what was presented and also your summary view. The one point I would like to make, too, is that, you know, we do have access to the Google Docs offline. That's what Alex is referring to. If you don't have access for any reason, please go out and check and let us know, and someone from Excel will make that access available. The other thing is, I just think in terms of process, if there are any comments that you have relative to what's written there, if you would add the comment, you know, I think the best way, Alex, for the folks on the task force would be to add their comments through, you know, insert comment, you know, the comment
boxes
paragraph versus changing all the words that are already there until we've actually gone through it and gone through each section that we're talking about. So that way your comments will be preserved and we can review those in a future meeting.
Thank you. All right, well, I want to thank everybody for their participation and feedback. Alex and Anil, I think we accomplished the task that we defined last night, so thank you for all that work. I look forward to seeing all the synthesizing team's contributions and to next week's call. Without further ado, I hope you all have a great rest of your week and stay healthy and safe.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.